It's the 4th of February, and we're going to be continuing mutual funds, and we have a lot to do today, but we have a lot to do every day. And we're discussing fees. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? No good jokes?
You like your bad jokes?
You like my bad jokes? Did I tell you about the alligator walked into the bar?
Yeah.
And the bear, right? How about the mushroom? I didn't tell you about the mushroom, but the mushroom walked into a bar. This mushroom walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? No? Okay. A mushroom walks into a bar and orders a beer. And the bartender looks at him and says, "Wait a minute, you're a mushroom. We don't serve your kind." And the mushroom says, "No, wait, you got me all wrong. I'm a fungi." He's not a mushroom. He's not a mushroom.
Very good one.
No, it's just that it really is bad. You're just getting to the point where you're like, okay, one more. Remember, in the back, there's always going to be some. Yeah, you just got to be careful in the back. Okay.
Are we still on 4?
Yeah, we're still on chapter 4. And what we did as we ended on Thursday is we went through the fees. And I know they're boring, and I know you hate them, and I know there's one over there, Andrea. I know you hate them and one in the back. Is that space right there?
Yes.
Yeah. I know you hate, you don't want to learn them, but you have to because you're going to be the expert. Question? Was there a question? Yeah. I forgot. See, this is it. I'm always forgetting something. Thank you very much. You don't want to know, do you? See, it was definitely something that that I unconsciously wanted to leave out of my thought processes. It was not a good day yesterday. And so, let's see. Come on, sweetheart. Come on. Oh, I hate the internet. I hate the internet. I hate the internet. I hate the computers. I hate the whole world of computing. You know, it used to be so much fun until Microsoft got in the act. It was Microsoft. It was all their fault. Okay, so let's go to my portfolio. What? Yeah, before then, how can we do it? Is this spring? No, this is... See, you can't even tell anymore which one's yours. Are these ours? Yeah, these are ours. Okay. Spring. Yahoo has messed up their website so bad. Actually, it's not too bad. We're only down 5.5%, 5.6%. Not too bad. Not too bad. Who's did the worst? 3D printing, of course, what you would expect. The high flyers get killed. And where's Facebook? We didn't do Facebook. Sorry, Vanessa. And so who else? Who else got hammered? Johnson & Johnson, yeah. And 3M, everybody got hammered. But I added Wells Fargo. Who else did I add? I didn't. I only had Wells Fargo. And we're still wondering whether we actually included DuPont. I thought we did, and then... Somebody said, no, we voted it down. But anyway, it's doing the best one, the one we can with. So, hey, figure that one out. So let's continue with our presentation. And we discussed fees, and I know you don't want to do it, but you got to learn. You got to learn all different classes because there are even more classes, but these are the most important ones. And we discussed the annual operating expenses. Every single mutual fund, every investment has annual operating expenses. But the mutual fund industry is required to show you in the prospectus, which I'll show you in a bit. And then the trading costs, how do we learn those? We just look at the turnover. And if it's really high, we know that they're paying more trading costs than if it's fairly low. Is that a spot open right there?
Yeah.
When you want to sit up here? Yeah, because... If the fire marshal comes and sees us having sitting people there, they get really upset. So eventually we're going to get rid of these, but that's after we lose some people. Light? You like it? You better have it small? I know, but the problem is when you turn up, then you can't see your own paper. You right? I don't know about you, but I can't see what's on my own paper. You can see what's up here. Remember? What? I know, but then watch. You'll see. You can see that better, but can you see what's on your page? So you guys happy with that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Remember, everything on this campus is low bid. Remember that, folks. You know, you're sitting on the space shuttle. Well, it's not doing anymore. But you're looking up at the sky going, everything's low bid. There's a spot right in the corner over there. Keep going, right in front of James. James, raise your hand. Right there. Sit down right there. Yeah. Okay. So turnover, the higher the turnover, the more the training costs. And we discussed the load funds and the different types of load funds. And we said that these broker no-load funds are not allowed to be called broker no-load funds anymore, but some brokers still refer to them that way because they're just still old. And then we discussed the true no-load funds. I'm still on the load funds. And then the advisor no-load funds, which really are no-load funds, but then they add a wealth management fee and the true no-load fund. So here we, that's where we were. I hope I didn't go too fast. But that, and you all studied over the weekend because there was nothing really much to do, right? You didn't watch the Super Bowl, did you?
Okay.
Not after the first quarter? Okay. And so here is a real-life mutual fund. It's called the Growth Fund of America. It's one of the nation's largest funds. And it invests mostly in large companies based in the United States. So growth that are growing, Growth Fund of America. And they have the class A, B, C, and then the F1 and F2. So I looked at the F2 because they're a little bit better deal. And the class A shares have an upfront fee of 5.75%. Now this is where we stopped, right? Well, we stopped on the previous slide. So I hope I didn't go too fast for anybody. That means if you put in $50, they're going to take $2.88. If you put in $100, they're going to take $5.75. $1,000, $57.50. $10,000, $5.75. $100,000, no. No, once the amount goes over a certain amount, then the percentage goes down. And as we'll see, the percentage goes down from 5.75 to 5, 4.5, 3.5, 2.5, 2, and then finally 0. And we'll see that later on. But let's just say we're not going to put in $100,000. We're going to put in whatever, $50 a month. So we're going to be paying 5.75% on our contributions. Now, where does that money go? Some of it goes to the mutual fund itself. It actually goes to the distributors of the mutual fund. The vast majority of it, though, goes to the, goes to the broker who recommended the fund to you. And, of course, the brokerage firm gets it, and then the broker gets some of the commissions. But then, every year, in perpetuity, they're going to be hitting you with 28 cents for every $100. That's what 0.28% means. 28 cents for every $100 you have in the account to pay the management fees, the people with the top hats, to go out there and knock on the doors and analyze the companies and decide, yes, we're going to buy this company, no, we're not going to buy that company. The distribution and or service fees are 0.24%. So these are the fees that the mutual fund uses to distribute and service and market and the similar costs. Do banks show you how much they're charging you for marketing fees? How much those ads are on the Super Bowl? Do life insurance companies show you that? Do car companies show you how much every part of you, what do you buy a car, it costs in marketing? I mean, you know you're paying for the advertising, right?
No.
We don't see it as an expense, but in the mutual fund industry, they have to show you in such a way that you have a very hard time understanding what the hell it is. It's called the 12B1 fee. Doesn't that make sense? 12B1? Uh-huh. Okay. And how about Coca-Cola? Do they show you how much you're paying in advertising? No, but mutual funds must. Other expenses, 18 cents. So these are the lights and the rent and the website and the accountants and all that other stuff. So that means, in perpetuity, folks, 70 cents for every $100 you have in the account will be taken out as a fee every year. Now, you don't see that as a charge on your statement. It's net. So don't say, oh, my mutual fund earned 10%, but I really only earned 9.3% because they took out the 0.7%. No, that 10% or whatever they report they earned is net, is after that. Now, does that sound like a lot of money to you? 70 cents for every $100? Yeah, some people say yes. It's actually on the lower end for mutual fund companies. It's on the lower end. We're going to see there are some that are even lower. But these are a little bit more typical, as we'll see. And so, this company, for decades, did not have any other fee type other than Class A. They sold you their mutual funds up front through brokers. And along came the true no-load funds that started to have competition, started to eat away at the share of the regular mutual funds, the traditional mutual funds. And the brokers got upset, right? They don't like this. They don't like competition. So they wanted to have another type of class. So when you said to your broker, well, Ms. Broker, well, Mr. Broker, I don't really want to pay an upfront fee, what did they say? No problem. Sit down, Booby. For you, we've got the Class B shares. They have a back-end fee. And you say, well, wait, it doesn't make any sense. What difference does it make? If I go from the front-end fee to a back-end fee, I'm still paying it. No, relax! As long as you... See, the maximum deferred sales charge is 5%. But as long as you keep your money in for 6 years, you won't pay any sales charge. Because what happens is it is contingent deferred. I love that word, contingent. It starts off at 5% and then goes to 4, 3, 2, 1, and then disappears. And you're going to hold your mutual funds for the long term, aren't you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? Mutual funds are long-term investments. And you nod your head yes and say, okay, yes. What? You see, nothing's free. So there's the same 2.28%, 28 cents for every $100 for the managers. But look what happened to the 12B1 fees. You see what they did? Bing! They jumped. They jumped from 0.24% to 1%. And they stay there for 8 years. And then what happens is these things go over here. Your Class A shares become Class B. I'm sorry. Your Class B shares become Class A shares, and you no longer pay that extra 12B1 fee. Are you with me? You understand? Do you think most people understand this? Hell no. No, they don't. And the industry is, you know, I'll see the prospectus. Then the 0.18%, 18 cents for every $100. So $1.46. This is more typical of what mutual funds charge, anywhere from 1 to 2%. It's very typical, especially the mutual funds that are in your 401k, 403b. They have a tendency to charge at least 1 to 2%. You go to your broker, well, I don't want the upfront fee, and, you know, I might sell these shares within a couple of years, so I don't want the back-end fee. And so your broker says?
No problem.
No problem. You got to get with the program, folks. Your broker says?
No problem.
For you, we have the Class C shares. No upfront fee. No, well, there's a 1% back-end charge if you take the money out within a year, but that's not what you're going to do, right? This is a long-term investment. 28 cents, there's the 12B1 fee for 10 years, and then 22 cents for the other expenses, or $1.50 for 10 years. So you go to your broker, I don't want an upfront fee, I don't want a back-end fee, I don't want high operating expenses, and your broker says? I know it's early, but come on, right? Your broker says?
No problem.
For you, we have the financial investment advisor shares. We're not your brokers. Oh, no. We're your wealth managers. And so for you, no upfront fee, no back-end fee. Look, lower annual operating expenses than the A shares. What's not to like? Sign here. By the way, we'll charge you an extra 1 or 2% for FYI. Sign here, please. You're not signing. What's wrong? What's going on? What happens is these shares are held in what is often called a wrap account, or a wealth management account, or a broker-managed account. And what the brokerage firm does, not the mutual fund company, but the brokerage firm takes 1 to 2% out every year for as long as you have the money with them. But they send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you golfing and everything's fine. You're all quiet. Do you like that idea?
No.
Neither do I. And I don't have any clients that do that. I would try to talk them out of it. And yet, this is what's going on. The brokerage firms are really pushing these things. And oh man, I've seen people one serious account, and the fees were $150,000 a year. Now, this was an account with millions in it. It wasn't my account. I'm looking at it going, ah. And they didn't even know. I explained to them. I said, here, what's that charge right there?
I don't know.
That's the wealth management charge. At least they're showing it to them. Who was it? Wells Fargo, I think. So what do you think? Which ones do you want? Yeah, we're going to see the Class A over the long term turn out to be the best deal. Now, here's another company, a competitor to the Growth Fund of America called Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund. Alliance is the name of the company. Their fund is called Large Cap Growth. Mostly United States companies, big companies, and they're growing. And look, the upfront fee on the Class A shares is less, isn't it? 4.25. Not bad. But look at the management fee. 75 cents, 0.30 cents for the distribution and service fees, 12B1 fees, and 20 cents, so $1.25. So sure, they're charging you 1.5% less on the upfront fee, but they're charging you $0.50 more every year in perpetuity. They have the Class B shares, which only start at 4%, 3, 2, 1, and after 4 years, you don't pay a back-end fee. But look, 75 cents, $1.35, $2.09, and now we're getting close to what banks and insurance companies charge you on your money, but they don't have to show you. C shares, again, the 1% fee if you take the money out within a year, which you're not going to do. 75, $1.30, $2.05. And the financial advisor shares 1%, but then tack on an extra 1 or 2% on top of that. Make sense? Okay, good. Now, here is another mutual fund, used to be very famous, now is very infamous. And we'll talk about the gentleman who was who ran this fund later on when we get to All Stars of Investing. His name is Bill Miller. And this fund was rocking and rolling until 2006 when it crashed and burned. But they did not have the Class A shares. They had they called them primary shares. And after it crashed and burned and the whole industry was going through turmoil in 2008, 2009, they said, all right, maybe we'll join them. So they created Class A shares and then started marketing them to brokers. Brokers like the Class A shares. They changed the name from primary to Class C, but it's very similar. 5.75%, like the very first fund we looked at, 68 cents for the management fees, 25 cents, 11, $1.04. Class C shares, a 0.95, almost 1%, if you take the money out within a year, which you're not going to do, don't do it, it's not a good idea. 68 cents, 95 cents, 17 cents, $1.80 for the primary, now Class C shares. And then the financial advisor, FI, financial advisor, 1.07, add 1, add 2%. Institutional, what do you got to do to get those? You have to be institutionalized to get those? We'll discuss those later. Now for something completely different. I'm an old Monty Python fan. And this fund is entirely different than all the others. We don't even see any other classes. Actually, there is. We'll take a look at it in a minute. But there's really only one class of this fund now. And this is an index fund. It's a very famous index fund. You've heard of Vanguard, right? You can't help but hear about them because they advertise, don't they, on television? Yeah, and they do a lot of advertising on the web. They're the world's largest mutual fund company now. This fund does no research. They simply buy all the 500 stocks in the Standard & Poor's 500 index. So you or I could run this fund, assuming we can read. Because you read the list of 500 stocks. If they're on this list, what do? Buy them. If they're not on the list, you don't buy them. That's that simple. And we call this, and I want you to remember this, passive management. The others were all actively managed. The manager was going out there knocking on doors saying, yeah, we'll buy GM, yeah, we'll buy Ford, no, we won't buy Toyota. Or yes, Verizon, no, AT&T. Whereas this company, and there are a whole lot of them now, they simply look up the stocks in the S&P 500 and buy them. And if they're not in there, they don't buy them. Now, what happens when a company enters the S&P 500 and one is jettisoned? They must sell the one that was kicked out and buy the one that was added. But what does that do for us? No upfront fee, no back-end fee, management fees of only 14%, 0.14%, I'm sorry, not 14%, 14 cents for every $100, 3 cents for the other expenses, and what's this? If you have a low balance fee, or low balance, under $10,000, they will hit you with a $20 fee. That's their 12B1 fee. If you put it over $10,000, then you don't have to pay that $20. So what do you think? Pretty amazing, isn't it? Well, it better be low cost. Why? They're not doing anything. Right? They're just simply going out there and buying the stocks that are in the S&P 500 or in the Dow Jones Industrial Average or in the NASDAQ. And we'll discuss those in detail in Chapter 5, which is a problem with starting Chapter 4 before Chapter 5, doing mutual funds before that, because we're using things that we haven't even discussed yet. But just think of it as a list. Now, here's another index 500 called the Spartan 500 from a company that used to be the number one mutual fund company but was passed by Vanguard. And so what did Fidelity do? You can't beat them. Join them. And so they responded by eliminating all sales loads, creating their own index funds, and lowering their fees below Vanguard. So no upfront fee, no back-end fee, 2.5 cents for every $100 in the account, a low balance fee of $12 if it's below $2,000, and 7% for the other expenses. So less than 10 cents. How low can you go? Right. But if you get billions of dollars into this thing, it's still generating a lot of money for you. It's still generating a lot of fees. Make sense? Nod your head yes. Okay, good. I don't want to go too fast. So now, in the prospectus, they will also show you how much a hypothetical, meaning it's made up, $10,000 investment with a 5% return will cost you over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. So that first mutual fund we looked at, the Growth Fund of America, if we put in $10,000, we're going to have to pay $575 on the first day. That's going to go to the mutual fund, some of it, and some of it to the broker. So that means the first year we're paying $642 along with the 70 cents. And the B and the C shares don't have that, so they're a lot less. And then the F shares are a whole lot less. But what happens as time goes on? Those of you still awake? No, it's hard to stay awake, I know. It was the Super Bowl that did it to you, right? Now you're real tired. Which one winds up costing us the least? Now forget the F shares for now. Which one winds up? The A share. So if you have a broker that you trust and they're showing you A, B, C, F shares, which shares are the best deal? The A shares. And now, if you're a broker and you sell these things, if you sell the B or the C shares, you have to get your client to sign something saying that they have been advised that they could wind up spending more with the B and the C shares. Now, if you're putting $50 a month away, you know what the difference is over 10 years? Doesn't really matter that much. Over 10 years, putting $50 a month away, but over 40 years, it's going to be a big deal. But by that time, these things, the B and the C shares, the fees go lower, so it won't be that big a deal. Now, the F shares look like the best deal, right? Right? Yeah. Wrong. Because your broker's going to want to charge you anywhere from 1% to 2%. And that's $1,200 to $2,400. And we really should make that a little higher because it's going up by 5% every year. But that's just the... So which one's the... Yeah, stay away. I have to apologize on behalf of my industry. But, of course, it's easy for me because I got a job. I get paid by the state of California, actually from Southwestern Community College, but they get the money from the state, and I don't have to worry about making my mortgage payment and the like. But if you're a broker and you're looking at, I got to go make another boat payment, and my Porsche is due. I had a client, still dope, but she came into a serious amount of money, and she was thinking of going with me or going with these people at her church. Did I tell you this already? No. How do you compete with Jesus? Right? And so she showed me that they were going to charge her 2%. That's right. It's not God. This is Caesar, folks. This is Caesar. This is, anybody say, well, I'm doing it for God. No. This is Caesar. So keep this. God's over there. This is Caesar right here. And I explained to her what they were doing, 2%, to just basically manage things that they're not even doing, and somebody else is managing them. And she went to them and explained, I explained to her, and they immediately dropped it to 1%. No questions asked. Yeah, I guess we can't make 2 boat payments every month. We can only make 1 boat payment. Okay. All right, now, the same thing is true for the Legg Mason Value Trust. Over the long term, the A shares wind up being cheaper than the C shares. Add the $1,200 to $2,400 for the financial intermediary shares, and then the institutional shares. Can you get them? Well, are you a large pension fund, a university endowment, or a tax-exempt charity? And, oh, by the way, do you have at least $1 million to invest with us? Sorry. Now, take a look at the Vanguard Index 500. Woo, woo, woo. Got your ABCDs? Got your ABCDs? We're going to need them in a bit. The investor class, which was the original class that we looked at, 17 cents per year for $100, so that's $17 in the first year. Over 10 years will cost us, on a hypothetical investment of $10,000 and going up 5%, $217. So, dear students, the fees for passively managed index funds will almost always be less than actively managed funds. Unless they try to sneak one of these dirty, rotten, stinking index funds into your 401k plan with fees of up to 1% or more, the bums, which I'm going to show you in just a minute. Vanguard created the Admiral class. See, Vanguard, I don't know if you're into nautical terms, but the Vanguard is the first group that goes out. And so they got pictures of ships and everything. So the Admiral class used to be available with a minimum of only $100,000. But a few years ago, they changed it. If you have $10,000 now, you get rid of the low balance fee and you pay a whole lot less than the original shares. And you remember the exchange-traded funds we discussed? They often have fees lower than the index funds. Why? Because the mutual fund doesn't have to worry about who owns it. The brokerage firms take care of that. So how low can you go? Okay, good. Now, the break point, the reduction we discussed. We said that for those first shares, the Growth Fund of America, A shares, the sales charge was 5.75%. But if we either purchase or our account goes up to 25,000, they drop to 5. At 50,000, 4.5, 3.5, 2.5, 2, 1.5. Until you have $1 million to invest, you don't pay any sales charge. Now, do you think the industry is trying to tell us something? We want the rich people. We don't want you little peons. We want, and I apologize, but that's the way it is. Now, this is no longer allowed. You will get censured. You will get fined. You might even get suspended. Some brokers would fail to inform their clients of this sales charge breakpoint feature. Instead, as the client approached the breakpoint, the broker would show them another fund. Do you understand what happened?
Keep the money coming in.
To keep the sales charges at 5.75. When I heard this, I thought, oh man, you guys, you can't really be doing this to your clients. Oh well. Here's the contingent deferred sales charge. I just love that name, contingent deferred sales charge. For the Growth Fund of America, 5% for the first year, 4 for the years 2 and 3, 3, 2, 1 until after 6 years, no sales charge, no back end charge. Make sense? Okay. Are you confused? Good. That's, our industry has done the job. Okay. Sorry. What can I say? Is somebody trying to get in? Does he need help? Oh, Hugo, what did he do? Hugo, what did you do? Oh, jeez. What happened? Was she worth it? No. I'm telling you. Okay, so here you go, folks. I'm going to give you 10 grand, 10,000, 10 years ago. Not 10,000 years ago. 10 years ago. I'm going to give you $10,000 10 years ago. And which would you choose? Now that you know about the fees, would you choose Growth Fund of America, Alliance Large Cap Growth Funds, Legg Mason Value Trust, or the Vanguard Index 500? Do you want to go cheap, pay those upfront fees, or go with a broker no-load fund, which was not allowed, is no longer allowed to be. You don't have to be right. It's not real money. So what do you think? A, B, C, or D? We got some A's, some D's, D's. Okay. All right. So who did the best, huh? Huh? Fees are important, but they certainly don't tell you the whole story. When comparing mutual funds, you must look at many attributes, not the least of which are the rates of return, preferably over longer periods of time. So these two companies were able to, as they say in the industry, add value. They were able to beat the index over 10 years, which is pretty darn good. And this number is net of the upfront sales charge. If you happen to have the $1 million and not get charged, you actually received a bit more, 8.31, 8.94%. Here's the S&P 500, and there's the Index 500. How come it didn't match the index? Well, remember, there's a fee involved. They have to run the mutual fund. You can't buy the S&P 500. You can get pretty darn close. But look at the Legg Mason Value Trust. Significantly underperformed the index. Now, if you had looked at that in 2006, your eyes would have popped up because this guy was up at 36,000, 37,000. These were about 24, 27. This was about 22. And you say, what? How could he have done that? How could he have gone from 36, 37,000 down to 12? It's a humbling experience being in the industry, folks. There's an old saying, if you don't know who you are, the stock market is a very expensive place to find yourself. You didn't like that one? Yeah, it is. Okay, great. All right, now, checking for comprehension. Who's got their ABCDs? Come on, who needs them?
Wake up.
You need a D.
Yeah.
What happened to your D? Okay, because I want you to know this. Why?
It'll be on the test.
But more importantly, when you walk into that 403B or 401K meeting with the guy in the three-piece suit or the woman who looked like a man, who tries to look like a man, with a little bit of shine, and they got the gold watch and everything, and they're going to snow you. They're going to say, oh, we're doing wonderful things for you folks. You know, no upfront fee. Not like the other people. And then you're going to look at their, wait a minute, and you're going to make them look really bad, and all your friends and your colleagues and your coworkers are going to say, where'd you learn that? And what are you going to say? Yeah, right, Business 123, Southwestern Community College, and so that'll keep us going. I wash your back, you wash mine. So these shares do not have an upfront sales load. Instead, they assess a decreasing back-end load if you withdraw your money within 6 years. The annual operating expense is higher, courtesy of the 12B1 fees. Back-end load are... Come on, you don't have to be right. Back-end load are Class B. Back-end... How'd you wind up with two Cs? Is that two Cs? Oh, CD. How come they're the same color? Not supposed to be. It's supposed to be three different colors. Okay, I can't see. I'm colorblind. Okay, these shares do not have an upfront fee and only a 1% back-end fee if you redeem them within 1 year. The advisor called them broker no-load, but you notice that their annual operating expense is higher than the other share classes. Again, courtesy of those ubiquitous 12B1 fees. A, B, C. Oh, look at all those Cs. All right, yes. They sometimes revert to Class A or Class F after many years. Your financial advisor tells you that these shares have no sales fee, and a very low annual operating expense. She mumbles something about wealth management. These shares are A, B, C, or F or I shares. Yeah, right, the F or I. She also did her best not to explain to you that her brokerage firm will charge you an extra 2% each year. Okay? Excellent. Now, real quick, you saw those Vanguard funds, right? And the Fidelity funds. Well, invariably what the brokers are going to try to do is sneak something into the 401k that'll be an index fund, but it will not be Vanguard's. It will not be Fidelity's. And so here, dear students, is San Diego County Schools, and that's what Southwestern's a part of. We're part of this consortium, and nationwide, never trust an insurance company. Let them sue me. I'd love them to sue me. Never trust an insurance company with your investments. You want insurance, you go to insurance company. You want investments, you go to investment company, which is a mutual fund company, or maybe your brokerage, you decide on your own. But they came in here late 2002 and started telling us all these wonderful things, how we're not going to pay any more sales charge anymore, and they're going to be on our side because it's nationwide on your backside. And they didn't realize that they had a ringer out in the audience. They came in here, idiots. They were really two idiots. They had a PowerPoint presentation with about 70 slides, or 70 or 80, I wasn't quite sure. And it was a 45-minute presentation. You're lucky to get through 20 in 45 minutes, folks. I mean, that's you know, they don't know anything about teaching, obviously. They would have asked us. So, but they actually have some pretty good funds in here. And there, where did it go? There are the, we'll talk about the Freedom funds later on. But they actually have some pretty decent funds in here. And they have their own funds, which, see, NW means nationwide. Fidelity Advisor, those are the advisor funds through Fidelity. But this Freedom, that we'll talk about that lifestyle funds. There's the world's largest mutual fund, the PIMCO Total Return Fund. And then there's the Growth Fund of America. Now, the Growth Fund of America, we noticed, had a 0.7%. They have 0.39. And they will tell you, we're only paying you, charging you 0.39. Liars! Because they're charging, they're putting 0.65 on top of that. In perpetuity. So remember the Class A shares, you had to pay the 5.75%, but then you paid 70 cents. So over time, which was going to cost you more? These guys. And they just lie to our face. They go, ooh, you're not paying. Well, it's not true. It's true that we're not paying the upfront sales charge, but they're not telling us that over time they're going to wind up charging us more. It goes right into Nationwide's pocket. Now, where is the... Here it is, folks. This used to... Oh, yeah, there it goes. This used to work. When they started in 2002, they didn't have Nationwide's Index 500. They had this Galtmore. I forget the name of it. It was strange. And it had 0.7% or something, like 0.74 or something like that. Now, remember, what was Vanguard's? 0.17. Once you got to 10,000, it went to 0.05. This one is charging you 61 cents, 0.61, and they're tacking on an extra 0.25 or 0.3. I got to go look. I think it's 0.25. So I'll err on the side. I know it's not less than that. So they're charging you 0.61 plus 0.25, that's 86 cents for an index fund. And it's going right into their pockets because what are they doing? What does an index fund manager do? Everyone should say nothing. Wait till I ask you. Some of you are falling asleep on me. I apologize. But an index fund manager just looks at the list of 500 companies in the S&P 500 or however many companies are in the Dow Jones and then buys those stocks or bonds or whatever they are, whatever index it is. And I, the yo boy, excuse me, sir, how come you're selling us this 500 index fund, this Galtmore with 0.74%? I mean, why don't we get Vanguard, somebody that's cheaper? Oh, we're working on that. Oh, don't worry, we're working on it. And by the way, you'll notice that they have 70 some odd funds or 90 funds or something like that. And what your assignment is, one of your assignments, there's two assignments, and we'll give them out either today or some of you already took them. Your assignment is to go in there into the infernal net and look up the thrift savings plan. Some of you probably already own it. How many people have the thrift savings plan already?
Used to.
You think you sold out or you moved it, you rolled it over?
In the military.
Yeah. If you're in the military, if you work for the federal government, you have a 401k plan. It's technically not a 401k. It has its own law, has its own legislation. But it's a 401k plan for the federal government. And they have five funds. What happens is when you give people this many choices, they go, they get that deer in the headlights stare, and they go, what are you going to pick? I don't know. What are you going to pick? Ask Frank. Ask him what he's going to pick. And that's a lot of people came to me and asked me what I pick. I said, I'll tell you what I think are good, but I'd say, you know, they're bums. Any comments, criticisms, suggestions? All right. So you're going to compare, and it's on the website, so you can look at it, and you can listen to my presentation that I give to the online students, where I take the time to really, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I really give them help. And I'm hoping that they someday sue me. They threatened me back in 2002. They did. They told me to shut up. Yes. They told me to shut up. They basically threatened me. And I said, what? No, oh, no. If they offered me money, I probably would have said, yeah, okay, give me the money. Do you guys know what they just gave me? Here's the checkbook. I would have, that would have been great. And they threatened me, and I basically said, look, you can't do anything to me. You can't. You can't get rid of me. The only way they can get rid of me is you fondle the students without their permission. And then they're going to get rid of you, right? If you have their permission, no problem. Steal a lot from the college. People steal from this college all the time, but if you steal a lot from this college, then you're in trouble. I guess if you walk across the campus naked, you could probably get fired. I don't know, but yeah, it's pretty hard. Okay, so, all right, so time to stretch and relax and wake up. I know it's tough, but now, dear students, you know everything. Well, not really, because there are a whole lot more types of classes. But you have the idea. You have the idea about the classes, the most important classes, and the fees. And I really do want you to study it. It's not something. There's a very few people who can see this once and keep it. But there's not too many. I'm not one of them. And by the way, I do teach this in the 121 class. And oh boy, do people get the answers wrong on the exam. They just don't even, they're just so far off base. And I'm wondering whether I should even continue to teach it in the 121. Wait, but they don't all take quite a few people were in the 121 class. So afterwards, if you talk to me, that'd be great. All right, because now what we're going to do, I gave out what I call the mutual fund scramble sheet, and by Thursday, folks, this thing will have been created on the board, because we're going to start from the riskiest mutual funds, and move all the way to the least risky. That's the idea. And these are just the major classes of mutual funds that you should really know. Of course, I'm going to ask you on the path, but you really need to learn these. And I was talking to an ex-student yesterday, and he forgot all of these. And I was going, oh, come on, you got to take Business 123 again. He goes, yeah, I really should. Because he was asking me really rookie questions, saying, come on, I know it takes a while. And it takes a while to internalize it. And so we're going to go from the riskiest to the least riskiest. The most riskiest funds are aggressive growth funds. Aggressive growth funds are out there trying to hit the home run, throw the Hail Mary pass. I don't know if you like sports analogies. You do? I don't know if they work really well, but this is the idea. They're or rolling the dice. You know, they're really shooting for the moon, whatever the analogy you want to come up with. Highly speculative mutual funds that seek large profits from capital gains, turnovers of 100, 200%. They're not really investing, they're speculating. And so what can we say about these?
Gambling,
volatility, speculative, right? Speculative is the, you know, industry's euphemism for gambling. And there are one or two categories above these. You'll hear
or watch or see momentum funds, or sometimes they're called ultra funds. And these are funds that are doing even more. They're just basically gambling. And I think you should stay away from these. But say you're interested in these. Well, you have a 401k plan that has an aggressive growth fund. I have the analogy that you may like, you may not like it, of a buffet. You like a buffet? When you go up to the buffet table, do you fill up your plate with jalapeno peppers?
No,
you put a little bit of jalapenos, right? Or a little bit of the hot, spicy, whatever it is, depending on Thai food or Indian food. Indian food is supposed to be the hottest.
Yeah.
It can make Thai in India, yeah. Oof, make your ears ring, you know, your head burst in sweat. So that's the spice. So put a little bit of spice. No more 5, 10, 20% at the most. No 20%, don't do that. The next group are the growth funds, and that's what we saw today. We saw the large cap growth fund from Alliance, the Growth Fund of America, and that guy, the Legg Mason Value Trust, which even though it said value, he's mostly a growth-oriented guy. These are growth funds that typically will invest in growth, or they're by prospectus, they will invest in growth companies. Make sense? Piece of cake? Am I boring you? Sorry. You don't have to answer that. Okay. Now, the next category gets a little weird. Capital, and I've been working on this for quite some time, and I'm actually getting better at it. Try writing upside down once. It's not too easy. Capital appreciation funds. Oops. There you go. I moved up. I should have just stuck with capital appreciation. Capital appreciation funds are mutual funds that seek long-term growth of capital. Wait a minute. Isn't that a growth fund? Well, maybe. But no. Capital appreciation funds are more flexible. Most growth funds in the prospectus will have a provision that states that they will invest primarily in growth stocks. Okay? But capital appreciation funds can invest in any type of company that where they believe that there's the opportunity for capital appreciation, which is a fancy way of saying the price goes up, the value goes up. So they can invest in what are called value stocks or defensive companies or cyclical companies. And what does those mean? Wait till we get to chapter 5. But they can invest in companies other than growth companies if they believe there's an opportunity to make money. So they, I don't know if this makes any sense, paint with a broader brush than a growth fund. Does that make any sense? They have a wider range of choices. But you have to be careful because in practice, they tend to be as risky as growth or aggressive growth funds, but not always. Some capital appreciation funds have exhibited less volatility. Others have exhibited more. This is what you're up against. And you may have heard of Peter Lynch, and we'll go back and talk about Peter Lynch later on, but he ran a company, a mutual fund called the Fidelity. Fidelity was the company, and the mutual fund is called Magellan Fund. And it just suited him very well because he's very eclectic. You like that word? Eclectic means all-encompassing. And he saw value in beaten-down companies or companies that were high flyers or companies that were just cyclical, that are just doing their thing, and they got up and down with the economy goes up. I don't really remember or know how high the management fees were, but Fidelity's were fairly on the average to high side. But certainly it got very, very popular. This was throughout the 1980s. And it ballooned to a size of which had never been seen before. And people kept saying, oh, he's going to crash and burn. He's going to crash and burn. The fund's too large. Well, at one time he had hundreds of companies in the fund. And he seemed to be doing just fine, thank you very much. And then he abruptly resigned and retired in 1989. He just said, look, I made enough money, I don't need this stress anymore. And people went, oh, how could you leave us? So every once in a while now they trot him out and have him talk about the music. He's actually very, you want to, I haven't given you the bibliography yet, But I'm going to give you a bibliography when we get to chapter 5. It's already on the website, by the way. It's in chapter 1, but it's also in chapter 5. And it's called Books You Should Read. You know, but you've got plenty of time to read them. And the very first book is his book called One Up on Wall Street. When he came out with this book, he was already pretty famous. And people thought, oh, he's going to talk about how wonderful he is. He's going to be self-congratulatory. Nothing could have been further than the truth. It was down to earth, easy to read. He really makes the case for why you should invest or why you should not invest in stocks and how to go about doing it. And it's a wonderful book. I consider it the best book for beginners to read if they're interested in stock investing. Eventually, you're going to want to read The Intelligent Investor. But don't read it first. It'll scare you to death. So don't do it. Because Benjamin Graham liked to scare people to death. Okay, make sense? Okay, so we're at the spice. Now, what's the next category? Growth and income. Now, wouldn't it be nice if they told us what it really meant? Well, income, yeah, they're income, but income from stocks is dividends. Comes in the form of dividends. Income from stocks comes in the form of dividends. And growth is capital appreciation. So these guys are interested in growth. Yes, we want companies that are growing, but we also want companies that are paying dividends because dividends don't lie. And this I consider the pasta, right? Here's the spice. Here's the pasta, or the meat and potatoes. Or this is what you should have the largest portion of your plate. I don't know if that works, but that's the idea. And sometimes they will offer or own bonds to augment the income. But not usually, depends. But they might say, oh, we can't get very much income, we'll buy some bonds. Associated with growth and income are two different categories that may make sense. In the case of blend, that kind of makes sense. Yes, we want a blend of growth and income. But the other one that has a tendency to be a very different connotation, depending on who you're looking at, is value. Value mutual funds are mutual funds that seek stocks that are undervalued in the market by investing in shares that have low P.E. multiples and high dividend. What's the P.E.? We come back to this P.E. We'll discuss it in detail in chapters 5, 6, 17, and the rest of the world. But right now, what we're saying is that value funds, in general, are looking for companies that are out of favor, where there's deep value in there. Maybe not tremendous explosion on the upside, but not like 3D systems. They're not going to fall down and fall into the porcelain oasis on the downside. Are you with me? Remember the Legg Mason Value Trust? It was not a value mutual fund. How's that? You see what you're up against? That guy invested mostly in growth companies. And so they should have called it the Legg Mason Value Growth Trust, but they didn't. And that's what you're up against. That's how hard it is to figure out what's going on in this industry. The next category, one of my favorites. Oh, by the way, growth and income is my favorite. Just going to let you know. Because if you're ever asked about what kind of mutual fund, a lot of people, I'll ask you on the exam, what kind of mutual funds would you choose? You go, I don't know. And I say, well, my favorite is growth and income. So if you choose that, right, what am I going to do? It's like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. Unless you do something really stupid. Equity income, which is people do. Equity income is a really bad name. Equity is another name for stocks, and income from stocks are dividends. So wouldn't it be nice if they called them stock dividend funds?
Yeah.
Wrong. They call them equity income funds because that ensures that we know what we're talking about and you don't, and we can charge you really big fees.
Aww.
Sorry. And now, if we got spice, pasta, what's equity income?
Oatmeal.
Is oatmeal exciting, folks?
No.
No, but
it's okay.
It's good for you. It's a whole lot better for you than the jalapenos and the bacon, right? It's a whole lot better for you. Look what it does for horses. I mean, horses eat oats, right? People say, oh, those vegetarians. I say, yeah, they must be really wimpy. You ever seen a wimpy elephant? Or a wimpy rhinoceros? Okay. They're vegetarian. Oh, they are? Okay. Anyway, so what are equity income funds invest in? Well, these are mutual funds that emphasize current income and capital preservation by investing primarily in high-yielding, income-producing common stocks. What are we talking about? Railroads. Are railroads exploding on the upside?
No.
They are? No. But are they going anywhere?
No.
Hell no. Food companies? Costco? Well, that's a retailer, actually. Well, actually, Costco does sell a lot of food, don't they?
Yeah.
Through their Kirkland brand. Utilities, real estate investment trusts. These are companies that invest in real estate, and they manage it on your behalf. They will also invest in bonds to generate income when the investment advisor believes that stock prices have risen to levels that threaten preservation of capital. So often you'll see preservation of capital, preservation in their prospectus, in their marketing materials. Now, they're still stock funds. So are they going to go down when the market goes down? Yes, but nowhere near as much as their aggressive growth, and growth in income cousins. And eventually I'll show you this, but these guys in 2008 went down 60, 70%, sometimes less, some of them less, some of them more. 50%, 30, 40%, 30%. Doesn't sound like much, but it's a really big deal. Now, when the market goes up, is oatmeal going to get exciting? No. Many equity income funds did very well. Actually, some of them went up in 2000 to 2002 bear market because they had lagged the market badly for years because they were the old economy companies. Who cares about retail? Who cares about the... Yeah, I remember one woman, this was in 98, saying, oh, who would buy a retail company or a REIT? In 5 years, all the stores will be closed. We're buying everything off the Internet. And I wanted to say, you're a stupid lady. But you can't do that to the client. Can't tell the clients they're stupid. Even though some of them are. But now, 15 years later, 14, 16 years later, we're seeing that, you know, Amazon is starting to really make a big dent in the brick and mortar, as they're called. But it's only a matter of time before who takes over that Sears company, that Sears box. You know, the big building with 400,000 square feet. Who's going to take it over when Sears goes under? Amazon! It's only a matter of time. I think Amazon will do it.
It's going into food market.
It's going to go become a food market?
No, groceries. They do groceries now.
Sears?
No, Amazon.
They do groceries?
Yeah, like in Seattle and now they do it right now.
Okay. Well, it's only a matter of time. They're not stupid. Okay, now, on top of these, so we've gone from the riskiest to the least riskiest. On top of these categories, we're now going to overlay a couple other categories. We're going to overlay the size, the capitalization. And we'll take a look at this in detail in Chapter 5. But there are three types, large cap, mid cap, small cap, and you could think of it as the papa bear, the mama bear, and the baby bear. This was in 121 also, exactly. Oh, good. And we did this, in the 121, we actually did this after we did stocks, so it made more sense to a lot of the students. So big companies, medium-sized companies, small companies, who's the riskiest? Small companies, because they get battered by the economy when things go bad, or technology changes on them. The large companies have their roots deep in the economy, but does that mean they're invulnerable? No, some of them are killed by technology or whatever. Kodak, right, gone. And then on top of that, we're going to overlay yet another category, and that is domesticity. Where are they based? And I asked you, and I'm going to ask you again, investing. Where did I get that word? What's the difference between global and international?
Global,
everyone should say, is? Everywhere. International, outside the United States. You must know that. Don't blow that one off. And so it used to be that domestic was where it was safer, United States companies. International was riskiest. And global was somewhere in between. Is that true anymore?
No.
Not really. if you look about the world, the large cap world and the small cap world, and yeah, I could say that international is more dangerous. But more and more, the world is global, so these distinctions are not as important. So what happens, folks? What happens is one company says, ooh, it's a domestic large cap growth and income fund. Or it's an international small cap aggressive growth fund. Or whatever. I hope I got this right. Did I get this right? Take one from column A, one from column B, and one from column C. And now you can see how the industry has exploded into thousands of funds. Right? Because if you statistics fans, do all the permutations. Take nine things, taking three at a time, or whatever it is. You can wind up with thousands of permutations is exactly what happened. Because one company has it, their competitors all want to have it too. So they all go out and get on the bandwagon and have a domestic small cap aggressive growth fund. And then we'll have other categories. Regional. So a mutual fund that's just based in Japan. Or a mutual fund based in the Far East or Latin America. Emerging markets, which from time to time are called submerging markets. It's a little joke. Submerging. What they're submerging right now, by the way. India, Mexico, Brazil, Russia. Have you heard the term BRIC? Brazil, Russia, India, China. As if the four countries are similar. They're about as different as it can be. But the emerging markets over the last 30 years have been doing very, very well. That doesn't mean from time to time they get hammered. They do. So if you're going to put your money into an emerging markets fund, you want to put a little bit of spice, exactly. And then sector funds are funds that invest just in a certain sector, just in wireless communications, or energy exploration, or pharmaceuticals. Now, what do you think of this idea? Dumb, right? It says dumb. That's dumb. It should be dumb and dumber. I shouldn't really be so harsh on these things. We buy mutual funds because we want two wonderful things, and what are they?
Diversification.
You guys in the back are falling asleep. Diversification and professional money management. Is this diversifying?
No,
it's concentrating. Now, sure, maybe you work in the energy field or you work in the healthcare field. And you're seeing that things are really hopping and popping. Okay, put 10, 20% on your plate. Don't put more. In my humble opinion, it's your money. You decide what you want to do with it. But it goes against the idea of mutual funds. It goes against the idea of diversification. And then if anybody tries to sell you a market timing fund, just kick them in the butt and tell them, forget it. You don't want anything to do with it. It can't be done except by liars. Those were the stock funds. Now, let's take a look. We have time. I know, I'm whipping a dead horse. Wake up! Bond funds. We're on a call. Yeah, we become bond funds. Now, what do we know about bonds?
They're awesome.
That's what he says. They're boring. They're reliable. But will they go down 50, 60, 70%? No. So they're going to be, so we come over here, and they're going to be far less volatile, less risky than the stock funds. And again, we're going to go from the most riskiest bond funds to the least riskiest. And the most riskiest bond funds are often called high yield or high income. Junk bonds is the common phrase. And these are investing in in bonds that are in distress. Sometimes you'll hear that word too, distress. And these companies or municipalities, the federal government is not, I don't care what anybody says, it's not going bankrupt anytime soon. These bonds are in danger of not paying. So just as a person who has a bad credit score is going to have to pay a higher interest rate, these companies have to pay higher interest rates. So what happens is they start to look more like stock funds than they do bond funds. Because when the economy does well, stocks are going to do well. But the companies that were in distress, in danger of not paying their interest payments, all of a sudden they've got some breathing room. They've got some room. Oh, yeah, money's coming in. We can make the interest payments. So the high-yield junk bond funds will often follow the stock market more than they'll follow the bond market. And it gets subtle, to say the least. And then the next category is corporate bond funds. I'm going to try my best to get through to balance and see if I'll let you go with that. But you guys are kind of falling asleep. Corporate bonds, usually rated A or BBB or above. And what does that mean? Wait till we get the bonds. It means they're companies that are not going anywhere. They're doing okay. They can make their payments. Convertibles. How's that? Wouldn't you like to have a convertible? Remember the hybrids? No, you don't want it. They're not that great. But we'll discuss those later when we get to bonds. And then muni bonds. Muni bonds are bonds that have been issued by states, local governments, school districts, bridge authorities, water authorities. And the cool thing about these things is they are free from federal taxes. Why? Because the feds can't tax the states can't tax the feds. So they are very popular with high net worth individuals, which is a fancy way of saying stinking rich. And it turns out for most of us, if we're not in those high tax brackets, they're really not that great. We're better off owning regular bonds, which pay more. And you can buy state-specific mutual bond funds. So for us, that would be California. And you pay no federal income taxes, and you pay no state income taxes. Because the state of California is saying to its taxpayers, to its citizens, hey, buy our bonds, and we'll waive, not this waive, but we'll forego the interest income tax, which is a cool thing, right? It's a very cool thing, and California is one of the largest. Yeah?
So when the stock goes bankrupt, what will happen?
When Stockton goes bankrupt and other entities go bankrupt, then there's a bankruptcy proceeding, and they go before the judge and they say, we're bankrupt, we're insolvent, we can't make our payments. And then there's an entire legal proceeding where the creditors come in and say, make their case for why they should be paid. And then the city comes in and says, you know, we can't do anything, here's our income. And the judge then decides what's going to be paid, what's not going to be paid. It's very dangerous, though, for a municipality to go before the judge. And you might have remembered a few years ago when the city of San Diego was saying, we're going to go bankrupt because of this pension. It was their own damn fault. It wasn't, they tried to blame it on the unions. It wasn't the union's fault. Not that I love unions or anything, but just I like to get the story straight. It was the people who made the unions a deal they couldn't refuse, and they should have been smart enough to not take the deal, but they didn't. They said, hey. And they said, we're going to go bankrupt. Well, it was all talk, because if San Diego is one of the largest cities in the country, and it has one of the lowest tax rates in the country. So if they go before the judge and say, we're bankrupt, unless there was some backroom deal beforehand, the judge would have went, because what can the city do? Raise taxes. You understand? But in Stockton's case, they have lost many of the people. The taxpayers have left. In Detroit, the people have left. So what's the city going to do? How are we going to raise taxes anymore? They're all gone. So now what the judge and the creditors and the city have to do, they have to get together and come up with some way of deciding who gets what. How much are the bondholders going to get? They might only get 60 cents on the dollar. Or maybe some white knight will run in and say, oh, we'll take care of those bonds. In return, you've got to give us all this land and all these tax guarantees. So we'll see what happens with that. Because it's going to take years. It takes years to go through bank. Sometimes, no. Remember GM and Chrysler? Remember, they went through bankruptcy really fast. Obviously, they knew what was going to happen going into the whole thing. They were some backroom deal saying, this is what we're going to do. Unions, okay, we're okay with it. You creditors, okay, we're okay with that. You guys, okay, we're okay with that. Walked in, and within, I think it was 2 months, was it? Or a month? It was really fast. That's very unusual. Sometimes bankruptcies take years. Make sense? Okay, good. Let's continue. And we're almost done, because now we're ready to take a look at the U.S.-backed bonds. U.S.-backed bonds, which for decades, the Congress, we're not going to back Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Who are these? Fannie Mae. It's not a candy company.
No, it's not.
They're a mortgage company. Well, they're not going to sell you a mortgage. Wells Fargo, Mission Federal Credit Union, is going to sell you the mortgage. They're going to turn around and sell it to Fannie Mae, who's going to turn it into a bunch of bonds with 1,000 other mortgages and send them all around the world. And the Congress sponsored these entities decades ago, and because the Congress sponsored them, they had an implicit, that means unspoken, guarantee that if anything ever went wrong, the federal government would run in and take care of it. And the folks in the Fed said, no way, it's never going to happen. We're not going to do that. Oh, maybe we will. And in 2008 and 9, when the real estate market went down the porcelain oasis, the federal government came rushing in, and now you, dear students, are part owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And they're making money. And they're paying it back to the Treasury. So the Treasury's actually making money. Now, whether or not we, I think we backstopped them $150 billion. But the last few years, they've been making tens of billions of dollars and giving it back to the Treasury. So we'll see what eventually happens. And then the very last group are government bonds, Treasury bonds, full faith and credit of the United States government. You think the United States government's going to go under anytime soon, folks?
No.
There's movies about it, and I had one guy in the previous class, in my 121 class, he was sure. There's a few people like, oh, this country's going down the tubes. Yeah, well, we're changing, and that's the only thing that, the only thing you can be sure of is that we're going to change. And then we're going to do the same thing we did over here, where we overlaid two other categories. And the first category is how long until maturity. Long term, intermediate term, and short term. Now, which do you think, again, this is the riskiest to the least riskiest, which one of these do you think is the riskiest? You think L, large cap, long term, small cap, short term, must be the same, right? Intermediate, mid? No, it's exactly the opposite. Long term is the riskiest, short term is the least riskiest, and it makes sense when you think about it, folks. If you're going to lend your money out for 30 years as opposed to 3, there's a whole lot more that can go wrong in 30 years than there is in 3 years. So short-term bond funds are the least riskiest, long-term are the most, and intermediate-term are in between. Again, we'll overlay domestic, global, and international. And so you pick one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. Make sense? Nod your heads, yes? And so, bond funds. Now, on Tuesday, we'll pick up with balance funds. And so, study, study, study. There's no football this weekend. You got plenty of time to work. And you got to notice. Now I can say for sure. Who snuck in late?